And the Build Your Own Champion has a better weapon than the freaking Black Sword.
To forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri.
Hello, ladies and gents.
And Mr. Red Powell.
Hey, what's up?
How are you guys doing?
I'm great, Adam.
I'm fantastic. I just feel like I always talk first. So I was silent pressuring.
I may leave that pause silent word on in there this time. So I edit out most of the breaks like that, but I may try to leave that one in there.
For posterity. No, I'm really good. I'm busy painting up Dark Angels furiously. Tournament season's about to actually start in Australia. We seem to have COVID relatively under control. Got some big tournaments coming up in the next couple of weeks. So yeah, trying to get my stuff all rosy and nice and ready.
Man, that's awesome. So on this episode, we're going to talk about some Deathwatch army list. We might get to a little bit of Space Wolf army list. I got some interesting feedback from Space Wolf players. It really is kind of across the board about how they feel about this new codex and what it's going to bring to them, what it's going to, you know, quote unquote, force them to do and maybe change. I'm hesitant to even say that. On this episode, we're going to have a very special vendor spotlight. We're also going to talk about our involvement with the Nova Open Charitable Foundation.
Yep.
This is going to be a good fun show. I'm going to talk about my continued trials and tribulations with the Silent King.
the Odyssey. It's man, it's such a special model, and you wouldn't want to screw up a single thing on it, would you?
No, and I do feel good about it. My critiques about the way the model is constructed are so minimal compared to the overall design and look of it. And this really, it's a showpiece thing. So, you know, I'm taking inspiration from what people are posting on Instagram and Twitter and stuff. And it is, you know, people are doing some amazing things with this model.
Remember I joked that Cacatros, is Cacatros the AOS dude?
Is that the, that's
the Bone Reaper, Bone Reaper whatever. Ossiarch Bone Reaper. Yep. I was like looking at him and I look at the Silent King together, and then that meme in my head from The Office comes in. It's the same picture. But I was looking at those two. I'm like, wow, it really feels like they took the best bits of Cacatos or whatever his name is and used it on the Silent King, and that they may have even designed those like as a part one or a part two, or as a, you know, he could have, like, Cacatos could have been the original Silent King design, and they just, you know, molded it into what they needed for AOS or something. Because yeah, I love the diorama. I think give me more diorama centerpiece stuff. Like, we got one for Sisters now, the Triumph of St. Catherine. I'd love them now that everyone's getting everyone's got their flyers, everyone's got their everyone's got their Lord of Wars, everyone's got their terrain piece or whatever they are that they're doing with that. Give everybody like a centerpiece diorama. I think that'd be freaking fantastic.
So given that, you know, diorama piece, I mean, we just saw the previews of the codexes that are coming up. You'd think they could give a return to Vect, right?
Oh, dude.
Think about it. That was the first third edition diorama. That he was the first, really.
He was.
I can't think of another one. Was there another one that was before that was set up like his model, a dude on a vehicle with, you know, he had his entourage and everything else around?
Let me think about that. For 40K, let me think about that for a second.
Even for fantasy, I'm trying to think. I mean, fantasy, they made it very readily available. They even encourage you in a lot of stuff to build like unit fillers that are diorama aesthetic unit fillers.
Fantasy had like a bunch of empire things. So what's his name?
The ship, the land ship. Yeah,
the land ship was so cool. The Grand Theogonist, I think is what his name was.
Oh, the dude on the Popemobile.
Yep.
yeah, the Pope.
I think it was the Grand Theogonist.
But outside of that, like 40K, I can't think of another one. I think Vec did it first.
I think you might be right.
And 40K, I believe you are right.
Yeah. Interesting. Someone will correct us if we're incorrect. But no, yeah, sure. that feels right.
Feel like it. Yeah, it feels right.
I'd love to see Vec come back, but not on just like a raider. Like, put him on a Tantalus. Put him on like Jabba's floating palace, you know, esque. Oh, you know, Jabba's got that big floating, you know, Jabba's Palace thing in Return. Put something like that for Vect would be stupendous. But yeah, like they've already got the model on the Tantalus. Vect on a Tantalus, dioramaed up. Mwah,
well,
do it.
It's pretty
work,
cool.
Get to work.
The rest of the ranges are catching up, because when Sigmar started doing it with, what was the first thing? That big undead thing.
Nagash?
Not Nagash. Nagash was, well, I mean, I don't think he wasn't the first, but I think the first was that, not the corpse cart, but the thing that the bigger corpse cart,
the black Black Coach?
Not the Black Coach.
There's the Coven Throne.
There
was the Necromancer. The Coven Throne was the one. You're right. Like, it had three vampires on it. You know, huge, you know, a bowl of blood and stuff in front of it. Mm. But it was held up by this small army of ghosts and whatnot that were kind of like a procession to it. And then there's the Necromancer version.
GW's first foray into, yo, we are the best model makers in the world. This hands down, no question. Nobody can compete. Please play Warhammer Fantasy Battle. And people were like, you know what? We're still not going to play Warhammer Fantasy Battle.
hey, I love
it was just difficult because what you were talking about, you know, that they had to change up. That's where I'm not going to talk about Sigmar, but I think that was everyone thought, you know, the old world had to stay the way it was, but yet we weren't playing it in buying models or whatever. So something changed, and now we got Sigmar. I think is freaking cool, and I own just as many armies for Sigmar as I did for Sigmar or Fantasy Battle back then.
But even before that, like, we had the things like the Plague Furnace and the Screaming Bell that would essentially, they were a diorama aesthetic that you would add into a unit. They weren't a unit of themselves, that's what the Coven Throne and things like that.
Yeah.
But they had this diorama aesthetic, and I think they haven't lost it. I'm really happy they're starting to use it more often as well.
Well, those things, they look kind of weird next to the models that were out at the time, but now these things don't. They look like especially the Necron Force. There's it's almost like old school Tyranids. You've got the shorter ones, the medium ones, the jumbo, and then the extra extra large, and then you've got the Silent King.
You do, man. You're absolutely right. Yeah, like the Termagants are the warriors, and then you got the Tyranid warriors are the new Scorpec destroyers or whatever, the tripod dudes. Yeah, you're right. And it just goes up from there. That's cool.
I love it. I mean, I saw one of the most dynamic entries for Armies on Parade this year, which, man, that's, I really had planned to do an Armies on Parade thing, like with my club, like the Wrong Way Kids. We were planning on doing an Armies on Parade thing, but, you know, with everything happening in the world, you know, just, we didn't do it, but some people out there still have. And one of the most impressive ones that I've seen is a Necron one. I mean, it's pretty freaking epic using some of these new things.
Oh yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I've got, you know, a nice thing about Indominus and all is the increase to my warriors. I now have, I think I have just under 200 warriors right now, and to make a whole layout like that of Armies on Parade, like, it's going to be pretty, it's pretty, I don't want to say it's going to look impressive, but I'm that's what I'm shooting for.
So I'm with the Silent King, and look, I'm not complaining. I know people are probably tired of hearing about it, but on these big models, I think some of the concepts can apply to other big models when they come out. You know, I'm not a huge fan of models on models because it's just more stuff I have to paint. So I look at the Triumph of St. Catherine and I just cringe. I'm like, I want that model so bad. I want it so bad. But oh my goodness, it's a lot of painting.
Yeah. I had a little, I don't know if we were ready to change topics, but I had a little gripe in my head. And this is me, Adam, throwing an absolute bone out to the Chaos players out there. So I did a Space Wolves, you know, review or whatever it is. And I realized that Space Wolves, just the Space Wolves faction, has more special characters, more named characters than the entire Chaos Space Marine range, including T-Suns and Death Guard. They have the same amount. They both have 11 special characters.
Nice. I'm cool with that. Wow. So Space Wolves are epic warriors of legend. Before, tell you what, let me finish up this talk about the Silent King, the concept. Right. So the riders, the Cryptex on, and the Silent King himself, you know, on the throne, I want them to look blingy and a little different. And I've some of my buddies, my accountability partners, you know, I talked to them, like, you know, I'm thinking about making these look a little bit different than the rest of the Necrons and the armies and stuff. And like, well, do you really want to do that? And they made me question it. And I'm like, you know what? Yes, I do really want to do that. They're going to look enough like the army to fit in. Like, everyone came on the same bus and you're going to know that. But this whole thing is going to look large and in charge, and you're going to know why this guy's writing the codes.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And that's my choice. I don't want him to be subtle. And I know the model itself is not subtle, but I want it to still stand out in the crowd of other things that are all part of the same army.
So they've managed to make it imposing without being like ostentatious. It's not overly blingy. Everything you're looking at, you can tell what it is. I think the Triumph of St. Catherine, I still don't know what that thing is. Like, I'm just actually going to look it up now, because you look at it and your eye is confused. I mean, especially if you're looking at it from the tabletop, you pick it up and you have a good look at it, and yeah, you can tell what stuff is.
One of the
from
characters the holding a plate of hors d'oeuvres. Yeah, there is. Carrying a sword.
Some canapes. They're having a lovely party. I'm looking at it now. Yeah, there's a lady at the front with a shield, and then they're all the different relics of St. Catherine, of course.
It's that so
makes
impressive.
All the sense in the world. It's really, really impressive. I mean, I would break all of those pieces in a heartbeat, but
I can't. When you stand back at the table, you can't really tell what it is. Like, whereas Silent King, you could be on the other side of the room and you can tell it's the Silent King and you can tell what's going on there.
Indeed. Well, let's take a break. We'll do that vendor spotlight segment and then we'll come back and we'll talk some army list about the Deathwatch.
You can let me have my rant, my complaint.
I will. You can do that.
Yeah. Sweet.
See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to a very special vendor spotlight segment. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined this evening by Gary Krieger.
How you doing?
Gary, man, thanks for joining me again. People might have caught our video interview we did leading up to the Nova Open Charitable Foundation.
Yeah, we just completed that, I believe, a couple weeks ago, and it's moving along quite well right now.
Yeah, building up to our virtual close of the winter raffles, some great things up. We'll talk about that after. That's not actually why we got you on to talk about. No. But people, go and get your tickets. Amazing things. But I have another kind of call to action here. You have a Kickstarter up right now, active, the Genesis Project.
I do. This is our second Kickstarter. Our first one was successful last year, and this is our second one, bringing in two new ages of gameplay for the game, and we're really excited about it. Our game in general, it has three separate ages to gameplay. We have our first age, which is our fantasy medieval, and then our second age, which is modern apocalyptic, and then you have your third age, which is like far distant sci-fi. And those three settings all play within one set of core rules.
But yeah, you explain that to me just a little bit? Because this is kind of a, I don't want to say it's modular or whatever, but it's not held to, like, it has core rules, but then it kind of evolves on its own based on how you want to play it.
It does, and evolves is actually quite the right word. Because what you do is you are able to create your own faction instead of having pre-generated factions done by the company that is putting out your game. Instead, what we give you is a set of traits and abilities that you get to select for your faction, and through that you create your faction, your classes. Heroes are created through gameplay, and every game is a part of your faction's history. So it's not just a game and forget about it. It's a game, get progression points, make and create new classes, customize your equipment, advance your faction through the age that you're playing. You can create your faction in any of the three ages of gameplay, but you can also play from the very beginning of the first age and play all the way through to the far distant future, creating this massive, you know, timeline of a narrative.
I like that. I mean, because you really are. You're kind of in control of what, you know, what matters to you, what you use, how you grow your force, even what miniatures you use.
Yeah, we are miniatures agnostic, and it gives you is some amazing flexibility and artists just, you know, you can love it because you're not set by your bases per se. You can use round, square. There's a loose size scale for game rules, but if your bases are not round and they're just a rock or a set of rocks, you can do that, or you can have these really cool shapes in there, like a pentagram type of thing, you know, that's maybe set in a circle and with some things on it. All of that stuff is perfectly legal, so you have a lot of artistic freedom to create your factions, and just about anything that you can make in any of the fantasy or sci-fi games out there, or the miniatures that are available, you can actually create for yourself in the game and customize it to how you want to play them. So you can customize to the models, you can customize to your play style, you can customize just because I want to play these rules, you know, these certain rules.
It sounds pretty cool, actually. Someone else on the show was telling me about it, that they've been checking this out, and you say this is your second Kickstarter. So do you need to have purchased the first set of things to play, or can you jump right in with this one?
So what we have is like I said, we have four books in total. The first and most important book is the core rules. That is how you play the game. That is all the rules for all three ages. It has the rules for activations, for movements, for combat, for your missions, for progression and things like that. So it has everything you need to play the game. It also comes with I gotta remember, but I believe it's six pre-made factions that were actually created by Kickstarter people that actually helped fund the Kickstarter last time around. So the factions that are in the core rules were made by them and then integrated into kind of a small narrative in the back. And I think I kind of lost track of where I was going with your question. But
do you need the first set things to...
Books. Yeah, so the core rules is probably the one book that you need to play, is the book that you need to play the game. But the Birth of Genesis, which is the first age, you can choose which age you want to play. So if you only wanted to play a science fiction, you know, science fiction, far distant future type genre, you would just get the first, you'd get the core rules, and you would get the third age and the third age book.
Oh, nice. And there's a way to jump in here. So I'm looking at the reward levels or the pledge levels here on the Kickstarter. And then you can get one age book, whichever one most appeals to you, and then the core rules.
Absolutely. And what was nice is we actually are helping Kickstarter with their beta add-on system, which fit right into us because that allows you to, once you make your pledge, you actually customize exactly what you want out of your pledge, including things like templates and things like that we have made in the past as well. So,
oh, heck yeah. At the time that we're recording this, I guess by the time people hear it, it'll be a few days later, but we're about halfway mm-hmm. through your campaign and it looks like you're going to make it. It's going to get funded.
We're close. You know, I never count chickens until they're hatched.
Oh, fair enough. I don't want to jinx it.
So. I'm certain that we will be funded, but we have a lot of other things that we are, for stretch goals, that we are looking to add. For our first Kickstarter, we actually produced a faction pack, which includes a whole group of pre-made factions that were actually played with by our playtesters, and we included those into a faction pack. So that was available as well. So we also had a first age campaign, which included additional rules to play on top of the game. Those included playing solo, also included playing up to four players in kind of a campaign type of, in a campaign type event where you're exploring ruins and this big demon is basically coming back to life. So, which ties into some of the factions that the Kickstarter, the people that pledged that have their books and the core rules, their stuff in there. So it kind of ties all that in as well.
So what size, like skirmish level, army size, like how many figures per game are we talking about here?
Okay. I'm going to say that it's going to vary a lot because we scale up. We technically consider ourselves a skirmish game. And the reason being is because we are playing model to model, even though you have squads. So if you are shooting in general, you are targeting models instead of targeting squads. There are things like automatic weapons that target squads instead, because that way the opponent gets if you're being shot with automatic weapons, you get to place the dice where you want and make your saves. But for the most part, you're playing model to model. So it is a skirmish game, and in general, the miniatures range from a game size from probably 10 models at the smallest scale, up to 40, maybe 50. And I've seen people field up to 100, but that's on the extreme side. So it just depends upon the size of the game.
So but you can choose, right? You can kind of decide right. What your level of involvement is. So, that's neat, man.
So what happens is if you're playing, we have different class levels in the game. And so your faction will have so many different level one classes, so many different level two classes, and so on up to five. Well, the higher the point game is, it allows you to bring higher level classes in. So when you're playing a small 250 to 500 point skirmish game, you're playing with only level one classes and maybe one level two model to kind of lead the group. As you play a higher level games, you're able to bring in then level threes and so on.
Dude,
so that's how we scale up.
Yeah, this sounds incredibly well thought out. I like the progression aspect of it. I like mm-hmm. the kind of choose your own adventure. You know, even with a buddy, you may have one friend that likes playing in the with fantasy level stuff. You got one guy that likes to play with sci-fi. You can both do it in here with the same core rules, and that's pretty neat, man.
There is a modifier, a bonus for if you play in a lesser age, just because the ages do play a little differently, of course, because there are different things, obviously. magic is a little more prevalent in the first age. So if you are building a faction in the second age, it comes a little bit more difficult. But there are a lot of there are still differences enough that there is a bonus. So basically, you're playing somebody more advanced. The amount that you can pick up and learn off of them is going to be a little bit higher, and you'll get bonus progression points for it. So
I've heard people are jazzed about this. I think by the time this comes out, you'll be close, if not at the goal. And I wish you the best with this, man. Great art, great concept. Yeah, and people are digging it.
Yeah, I'm very excited for it. I'm excited to get it into people's hands. I mean, there's nothing more exciting than seeing the factions that people are creating And I yes. tell you, they're
seeing your creation come to life.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting models from just about anywhere, even 3D printing now. So it really becomes quite the thing to see what people are creating and the different directions they go.
Well, maybe we can check back in with you about this in a few weeks or so and see how everything is going along.
That would be fantastic.
So we can change gears just for a second. The Nova Open Charitable Foundation, I guess we're going to be wrapping up the most recent raffles pretty soon, December 4th at 10 a.m. Yeah. Eastern time. We're going to do another live stream.
And it comes up so fast. It's right around the corner.
Yeah. But we had a good time. You hung out with us the last time we did it with myself and Adam and several other guests that rotated in. We're going to have that similar format. And I'm really looking forward to that.
I am too. I think it's going to be a good one. I think that we are, I mean, if we haven't done better than previous years, I'd be surprised. We have some amazing armies out this time that are just literally, I mean, armies, we're not talking just single models.
Yeah. Fully incredible. Functional forces.
I mean, these are ones that you win. They arrive at your door with free shipping and you can take them down to the game store that day and play.
Heck yeah, man.
Well, maybe not to the game store yet, but.
yeah, close. Soon. Well, soon. Folks, thanks for listening to us. Check out the Genesis Project. I will put a link in the show notes. It's on Kickstarter right now. And then come check us out on December 4th for the Nova Open Charitable Foundation live stream. Gary, absolutely. Thanks a lot for coming on.
I'll be there too. I'll be in the comment section trying not to harass people.
Please do. It makes it makes it more fun.
Well, thanks a lot, Paul.
Dude, have a great evening.
All right. Thank you.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
Everybody, we are back at the regular guys here. Please check out that Kickstarter. I think it's pretty cool. Red, you said you've been looking at it?
Yeah, no, and I love the idea of it. I mean, I reading through some of it, I didn't look at the demo or anything, but I really like, so I don't know if you saw, if you've seen Kings of War. I know we've talked a little bit about Warhammer Fantasy and everything, but you know, Kings of War, when it first started, had very few like models that applied to it. And so when I look at this Kickstarter, you know, the sci-fi setting, you can really use whatever models you want to play it right now. There's not like a set model range for it. And so as long as, you know, it plays into what you're looking at, and I really like the age aspect, because I might be off, so excuse me if I get a little bit wrong here or there, but I like how there's kind of this time, like the first book, the second book, and the third book look like they all kind of addressed a different period to a certain extent. And then you bring your own models into it. And so I think there's a lot of potential to that and how you kind of story build and in the lore, you know, the things we appreciate in the narrative aspect of it as you go into playing this game. And so I'm really interested. I do need to sit down and take some more time to read up on the mechanics and everything, but I like the premise of it out the gate. I think it's worth taking a glance at.
Heck yeah. Yeah. So Adam, you had a gripe you wanted to share with us.
Yep. I mean, nothing has changed here. This status quo has been the same for like the past 10 years. But literally when I bugged out when I realized the Space Wolves have 11 special characters, and that's all the special characters that every Power Armor Chaos army has. So that's all Chaos Space Marines is the core thing. And then Death Guard plus Thousand Suns. They total 11 special characters. That includes two Primarchs. Space Wolves just have 11 special characters. No Primarchs.
Are you saying they shouldn't have 11 special characters?
No, they should. They should. Chaos should just have more. Like, why don't we have an Alpha Legion special character, an Iron Warrior special character, a Wordbearer special character? Why don't we have fleshed out legions still?
Okay, I mean, to nerd out a bit, you know, I said this on a 40K podcast, but sure. Okay. Bear with me. Is that I kind of like the true legends from before the fall. They're still alive. They have not given, it's like the giant trees in the forest. They exist, and so the smaller trees do not.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. So just the fact that Khan and like Lucius are still alive means that there's no other real dudes in World Eaters that can get established and become special characters.
I think that's
so
the case. Yeah.
Build their own legends. That's fair. That could also be a thing. I mean, technically Huron Blackheart isn't from that age, but he's almost reached that level of notoriety. Like he's like, in the fluff, he's almost as powerful as Abaddon, almost has a fleet to rival Abaddon's. Abaddon even gave him a Blackstone Fortress for the lulz because he was afraid of him not siding with him. Yeah, I just feel like Chaos doesn't feel as fleshed out even in this day and age. They're just like, wow,
Space Wolves is a more fleshed out thing than all of Chaos.
And then I think the GW they tried to change that perception a little bit when they put out, what was the, so was the Corn, not Corn? What was that supplement?
Crimson Slaughter.
Yeah. Crimson Slaughter's like, oh yeah, no, guys, you've had it all wrong for all these years, for the 30 years you've been playing this game. Chaos is a bunch of renegades. They're not the Legions of old. And people were like, you know what? We're not down with that.
We're not down. Yeah. Don't tell us to throw out our childhood loves. I mean, there is room within there are, you've read the Horus Heresy. There are enough characters that they could bring back that could still be alive. I mean, is there actually any members of the Mournival still alive? I think they're all dead now, actually.
No.
I mean, outside of Abaddon.
Yeah. Because I think the later, never mind. Don't want to spoil it.
No spoilers, because I was just thinking, no, I think Little Horse still alive, folks. You know.
I feel like there's a lot more they could do. And I feel like it's a little bit of a shame that they have it. Well, I mean,
part of this whole thing with 40K is you can build your own heroes. Like the reason the two chapters are excommunicado or whatever is because they're there for you to build your own. And that's the same thing for all these heroes.
I'm not so bothered that, you know, World Eaters don't have 11 special characters. I'm bothered that Iron Warriors don't have any. Alpha Legion doesn't have any. Night Lords don't have any.
I think that's a great point right there. Really fair.
That bothers me. Word Bearers don't have any. And we know tons of Word Bearers, the ones that are still alive.
Okay. Counterpoint. One more counterpoint is that none of those legions really mattered past the big four. For over half, they were just a footnote in the Codex, in the same way that all these other Space Marine chapters were a footnote for 25 years.
Dang.
But I mean, so how many special characters do Blood Angels have? I can think of six. How many do World Eaters have? Which is supposedly, also, in your words, the equal comparison. They got one.
So several of the Blood Angel characters that existed in previous codexes are no longer there. So they even had more.
They've had more. They took them away. Had three versions of Tycho or whatever. The semi-lost.
There's like a Sergeant Cullen who was allegedly Dante's sergeant when he was in the Scout Legions. He's gone.
But
one or two.
What's the name of the Iron Warriors guy? That's pretty much reformed all the renegade Iron Warriors into a single force again. Starts with H.
Shimmer Jax. Iron.
I know. I mean, it's the omnibus is written on him, right?
Yeah, exactly right. What? He's perfect. He's perfect for a special character.
That goes back to, I will give it to Paul's point that, like, especially going into like Crusade and stuff, like making your own character. Don't get me wrong. Like, they could totally do to have a couple more special characters here or there spread out. But I do think that there's something to being able to make your own, and it really goes a long way.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I can't take away that. I mean, but that hasn't stopped anyone in Space Marines from making their own.
No, I think that it'll get there eventually. But I mean, remember though that most of our history as Warhammer and Space Marines have existed, like the Salamanders, the White Scars, Imperial Fist, you know, all that stuff was just a text, you know, in a book. And
yeah, well, that's fair. I mean,
but in somewhat recent memory,
Crimson Fist have one. They used to have two. They used to have Cortez, but he was just a sergeant. That was in like bloody second or third edition or something. But yeah, they've only got Pedro Cantor. But they're a second founding, so I think that's apples and oranges. Templars, however, Templars have three or four. No, three. There are some disparities even within Imperium.
Let me butcher this name for you. This is Warsmith Hansou.
Hansou.
Yeah, let me butcher that.
That dude is legit. He went into Huron's tournament arena and thing, and he won it, and which enabled him to be like have command of like all the corsairs and renegades that Huron had brought to bear. And so he just goes around pillaging, and yeah, really cool story. Anybody who's on board with that, that made me love Iron Warriors. Before I read that, Iron Warriors were like just super bland, like blander than friggin' Ultramarines bland.
Did Huron used to be Emperor's Children?
No, he was Astral Claws.
The Bad Up War.
Oof, that's a storyline and a half. My God.
Man.
But yeah, so here's one that gripes me up then. Astral Claws, three special characters. Wait, three or is it two? Minotaurs in the Bad Up Wars, three special characters. Huron.
Good looking characters too. Cool.
Fantastic models. Moloch is he's my favorite Terminator.
posed model, anything. It looks so good. But yeah, they just the special character game is not an equal equation. There are the haves and the have-nots. We can move on. I'm getting long in the tooth on this.
Just think of all the kitbash potential for all these Marines that you want to exist, that you could make exist.
Actually, sorry, I got one more. One more. So Space Marines Codex has the build your own chapter champion. And I, as a Black Templars player, I have the Empress champion. And the build your own champion has a better weapon than the freaking Black Sword.
That is a bit of a crime.
What? The build your own champ gets the damage.
That's because the skill is within the person, not the tool.
Well, I just figure it's just a sharper sword. That's why it's got more damage. Yeah, that annoyed me. I was looking at, like, why is my Empress champion a lot of the time worse? He's got more he's got like one more attack, I think. I think he's got 7 attacks. Pretty much the same strength, less damage. And you're like, oh, that sucks. Never mind. Man. Adam's rant's over. I'll be back next week with some other frivolous stuff I pull out of my whatever.
Perfect. All right. So Death Watch, I'll be real. I know you guys have been talking about Death Watch being cool and stuff, and I wasn't, you know, too hyped on it. But, you know, at the same time, you're right. This codex needs to bloom a bit. And as the meta develops, you'll see more of these tricks coming out and people being able to pivot out of their codex without having to really even change the models, you know, kind of thing.
Yep.
And which is nice. You don't get that with everything. And then I thought, man, I could put 5 Eradicators in the squad.
Yeah. And then you can combat squad that squad.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, you can.
Same with 5 Outriders. I mean, that's, I do not hate this concept.
Were we talking about this months ago, that the only thing that was holding Outriders back from being properly broke and too good was the fact you can only take 3 of them?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yikes. We will see how punishing that gets.
Yeah. They are missing a bit with their killiness. Like, you have to get, you can't just throw them into anything.
Yeah.
If
you could put a fist or a thunder hammer on the sergeant, they'd be possibly the best unit in the game.
Can you get cute with the combat squads and put something with a little bit of punch in it?
Yeah, but it wouldn't be on a bike.
Yeah,
like, you could put your intercessor sergeant in that side of the kill team, but you'd be shackled to his 6-inch move with your 14-inch move bikes. Craziness is that on top of getting your unit of 5 Outriders, on top of them getting a bunch of other sleuth of other buffs and if nots and blah 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 blahs, they're freaking obsec. They're just obsec because they're a troops choice.
Yeah, that's not bad either.
Like, cherry on the top, baby.
So I've been playing a lot with Outriders, and I really do like them. Again, 3-man squads, you have trouble killing, you know, super high toughness things a bit, but and the fact that they're not obsec does play, because there's only, you know, 3 of them typically.
Well, exactly right. The issue is, like, you've got your 3-man that shoots across the table, clears out your opponent's, you know, 10-man of guardsmen, and then he just walks another 10 guardsmen off, and you haven't changed much of the status quo. But as soon as they become obsec, yikes. Yikes indeed. It's also, they've got the kind of perfect size base as a 5-man, so they dodge the coherency issues, so they don't have to be, you know, within 2 of 2 guys. They dodge the blast issues, and they have the perfect size bases for screening out an objective. As soon as you get to 5 of them, you can just line them along the outside of an objective, where, like, to 3/4 or 4/5 of that objective, that no one can get to it. They have to come within engagement range to be onto that objective now. And that's where it starts to get kind of crazy for them, like, being shooting across the table, killing something, and then positioning themselves in such a way you actually have to charge them to get back onto it. And on top of that, they're obsec. You have to kill them to a man.
I love the base size. You know, I'm a big fan of the movement phase and moving your models. I think that is the most important thing you could ever do in the game, is mastering movement, even if you go and practice it by yourself. Like, you don't need an opponent to get good at moving things.
Same as deployment. When I was in 7th edition, I think 7th edition was a lot more prevalent than 8th, when we had the tit for tat and stuff like that. But in 7th edition, I used to practice, when I wrote a new army list and I was going to a tournament, I'd practice every major deployment, and I'd have it locked in my brain. This is my offensive deployment on Dawn of War. This is my defensive deployment on Dawn of War, et cetera, et cetera. And naturally, it would change opponent to opponent somewhat, but, like, the core concept would stay the same. And just getting that into your head, especially, I think you're a big proponent of muscle memory.
Yeah.
Both of you, actually.
Well, you ritualize it. You just ritualize everything, and then things are normal to you, even in the worst of times.
Mm.
But anyway, the base size, you can do some, it'll seem like you know, offensive things, you know, when you're over there blocking people out, doing exactly what you're doing, making, playing that objective game where they can never remove, if they only remove one or two of your mob, they have to kill the whole squad to make sure you don't score, you know, or they've got to come with an engagement range to potentially try to outnumber you or something. And you're not giving them any good choices.
Yeah, exactly right.
Just I've by the fact of the physics of their base size.
Yeah.
And I might have touched on it another time when we were talking about it as we were leading into the release of the Codex and everything. But I mean, you guys are right. When you talk about the Outriders, I mean, five models is... I agree with you, Paul. You know, they can't handle a lot, but I do think that their durability, their ability to just stick in there being four wounds and whatnot. And then, of course, I mean, it's not like they lose the apothecary, you know, the Space Marines, of course, are still going to have that around. I tell you what, and again, I may have mentioned this, but you take a squad and you put five Eliminators in there, and then you put five Infiltrators and you bring that Helix Gauntlet that eats up that first save, and you've got a pretty durable squad, and you've got those five Eliminators, which are arguably, I mean, so it's kind of like the same thing we were talking about with Outriders, right? That the biggest problem with Eliminators is that there's only three of them. When you knock that number up to five, I think you're really stepping into a new threat threshold. I mean, it's a whole nother bracket in and of itself, because five of those guys with their ability to pick up and target a character, I mean, that's character removing right there in a lot of cases.
Yeah, 100%. And I think sniper is going a little bit by the wayside. I think people are underestimating how good sniping still is. So I've created a couple of lists for Dark Angels. I like Dark Angels Eliminators quite a lot, because you stand still and you hit on the 2+, and then after you've shot, then you move. So you can get your move, shoot, move still if you need to, but you can also stand still, hit on twos, and still move. Also, that stratagem for being, you know, placed in reserves and then put back on the table in the same turn, phenomenally powerful, like crazy, crazy good for scoring secondaries. Everyone's going to try and bring things like Master of Sanctities. Everyone's going to try and bring things like Apothecaries. The same can be true for Necrons. You take away the Chronomancer, you take away the Technomancer.
Yeah.
Those aren't hard models to kill. They're not. They're toughness four with what, four wounds, five wounds at most?
Four and, to five. It's a major concern.
Yeah. And you take away their good reanimation protocols. You take away their 5+ invuln giving abilities. And just putting those pressure on your opponent early, especially when they think that those things are safe, really causes them to play a different game. And I think if you can do that for a minimal investment, like you take two, maybe three units of Eliminators, maybe that's an overinvestment at that stage, depending on who we're talking to. But you have to make them change the way they want to play. And as soon as you do that, I think you're in a much better position.
Well, I mean, five Eliminators with the infiltration stuff, I mean, it's, and then soaking up wounds, you know, like, you know what you're talking about with just, you got all these ablative wounds on them. And so you will be able to kill their high value targets. There's no, you're not going to not kill at least one.
Yeah. They've still got all these different modes. They haven't got their best mode of fire anymore. They don't have the line of sight shooting anymore on the Eliminators, but they're
one point I want to make is the only reason that you would need that out of sight, that out of line of sight shooting to begin with is because you were worried about your 3-man unit getting attritioned.
Dude, spot on. Absolutely spot on.
Yeah, I agree.
And so when you put 20 wounds in front of that before you even touch a single Eliminator, or 10 wounds, a lot of wounds. And before you touch,
10 wounds
before a single Eliminator.
Right, exactly. I mean, and if you really have to, I mean, if it's something light, like, you know, you can afford to, because the Eliminators still have those cloaks, so you can afford to kind of trade around your wounds. I mean, you know, of course, one of the Eliminators would die or something like that, but you may be able to afford that in certain regards, depending on what you're being shot with.
And then if you've got, let's say you're on a table where you've put 15 Eradicators and 10 Eliminators on there, what are they going to shoot at the first turn? Do they have a good choice?
Yeah. I'm such a big fan of the Primaris changes to Death Watch. I'm not actually sure what their non-Primaris units look like that much anymore, like the non-Primaris kill teams. So they used to take the full menagerie. You take a bikey, you take a jump pack dude, you take
to get the special rules from everything.
Yeah. You take a handful of Terminators because you could jank off wounds. You know, someone shoots you with Hurricane Bolts, you just take massed 2-ups. Someone shoots you with anything else, you take your 3-up invuln. All those metrics have changed, like they completely changed. Yep. But in a lot of ways, they got some backhanded buffs along with their nerfs. Like they just doubled the wound count of that squad.
Yeah. What I see people doing, I think, is mixing in some Terminators and then some Vanguard veterans.
Yeah. I honestly think a really good way of doing it, like the same reasons that I said that five Outriders are good because they get OBSEC, it can be applied to Vanguard Vets. Five Vanguard Vets with just a Storm Shield and
Lightning Claws, man. I mean,
yeah, Storm Shield, Lightning Claw, yeah. Storm Shield Fist, Storm Shield Chainsword, if you want to get real cheap, that are OBSEC, that can fly across the board and do a very good job of clearing other people's objectives. Really good. Just really good. A bunch of four really up invulns, two up saves, get him in cover for a one up armor. Fantastic. Two wounds each. They're cheap. They do a lot of work.
We were talking about before on the last show of, you know, replacing the opponent's unit on an objective with yours. Like just clearing them exactly off right. is not good enough in every situation.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of reason why Guard are struggling at the moment, because they're very good at like reaching out with Manticores and things and clearing opponent's objectives. But like, you know, asking Guardsmen to hold through your, you know, hold on to their objective through their turn, it's just not going to happen that much.
Yeah, I mean, just when you're rolling over there with this kind of much beef and the aggression that they can bring, you know, think you charge up five Outriders to somebody's five Frenzy and Wolves we were suggesting last session. Yep. You know, you're gonna chomp them. You're gonna sit there and you're gonna be over there scoring your points. Like, hey, man, I guess. Oh, did I get that point? Oh, I think I did. Yeah. Okay. Cool. I'm up 15 this round. How much you? Oh, you got nothing. Okay. Well, better luck next turn.
Well said. Can't disagree.
But I think this. I'm not a super fan of the Proteus kill team. That's the Firstborn kill team.
Yeah, the first. It was the opposite last edition. Like you'd never heard of the Primaris
ones. They really played into it in the previous edition of you know, you really saw a lot of Firstborn on the table, and I think they were still kind of figuring themselves out with the Primaris. I think they really came into their own with the Primaris in this edition. But what I will say in regards to the Proteus is I do think that everyone else that's out there playing, that played Death Watch, that's still playing Death Watch, and like more power to you, because I won't discount the Proteus team just yet. I think that there's still something to it, especially now that they all have two wounds. You'll get special issue ammunition. I mean, no, okay, so I'm sorry for everybody that had, you know, the squads of Storm Bolters built out. I understand that's out the door, but I still think Firstborn have a place, and I don't want to say that everybody that has, you know, anywhere from three to six squads of Death Watch Firstborn, I don't think that they're completely out. I do think that Primaris really stepped up.
Added some Terminators. Exactly. Maybe, you know, look, often sometimes I suggest people get kits just to have the bits and the veteran squad, the Vanguard veteran box is a treasure trove of Space Marine bits.
Absolutely. So I've actually written an entirely Firstborn Death Watch list, if you guys are keen.
Yeah, let's hear it.
The points aren't quite right. I think there was quite a few points. I think it was about 80 points left over after I'd written this that I could just tweak with and play with. But
two more turns.
Somebody asked me for a core concept for a Proteus-based kill team list. So it's got a Watchmaster. It's got a Libya jump pack, because of course you do, because the powers for Death Watch are actually phenomenal. It's got four Proteus kill teams, two of them with five veterans with Storm Shields and Death Watch Bolters, so that's special issue bolters, and then each one of those has three termies, one with Thunderhammer Storm Shield, two with Dual Lightning Claw, and one Vanguard vet in each of those squads with a Storm Shield. And then it's got one kill team with just five vets, five termies, just Thunderhammers, Storm Shields all over the place. And then it's got another one. This was the one, I think, I can't remember if there's two of these. I think there's two of these actually, with five vets. These veterans have nothing but their special bolters. And then it's got five Vanguard veterans, each with Storm Shields and Lightning Claws or Jump Packs. So that's five vets, five Vanguard vets, essentially, that times two. And then it's got a Chief Apothecary and three units of veteran bikers with chainswords and a multi-mounter attack bike attached to each one. So that's, I think it's five kill teams, if I'm remembering right. And then three biker units. The Firstborn biker units for them are actually pretty good. They're the same points as all the others, but they get an extra attack pretty much because they're veterans. The same points as regular bikes, but they're just better.
So extra attack, extra wounds.
Yeah, and they got to chuck a multi-mounter attack bike on there as well, just for some extra heavy lifting, and because it adds a bunch of extra wounds to the unit. But yeah, so that's the core concept of that list. That's 50 vets and then 12 bikes with a bunch of characters. It seems good. Like, it's hardy. It's actually quite hardy. There's a lot of wounds there when you boil it down.
Oh, that scores a lot of points. I feel like that scores a lot of points.
It does. Yeah, and you can kill combat squad that up however you feel like on the day. And that's, I think, where a lot of the power is. If you build into that, you're starting to build into a mechanic that's been removed from pretty much every other army in the game. No one gets to do much pre-game shenanigans now after you've seen your opponent. But an army like this really does. You really get a lot of mileage from that. And I think that's true for Death Watch across the board.
I think that's a big deal. I mean, really, like what you're describing, you know, we've talked about between bus stop lists and the amount of wounds that can be put on the field by, say, guard or, you know, now Necrons or orcs or what have you. But then you bring this out and I mean, there's a lot of volume, not just in the wounds that are on the table. Again, I really think the two wounds was such a big deal, really put them back on the table. Mm. But then you go into the amount of attacks, you know, the attacks that you're talking about that you're going to be putting out in melee and at range is just enough, like what you're saying, Paul, to replace another unit and put yours there and then be able to hang in there.
Yeah. The damage output from range is not going to be anywhere near like what it was. I mean, the damage,
sure.
I remember losing Riptides every turn. Not going to be there. Kill teams. That's just not going to happen anymore. But their survivability has arguably gone up just by dint of wounds increasing. I mean, people can argue that it's gone down because blah blah blah. You know, you've lost your jank ability with the 3+s and whatnot. But the fact is, the storm shields give you a 2+ armor now, so you're a lot less susceptible to mediocre damage and probably a little bit more susceptible to the high
volume. Las guns still get you.
Yeah. Well, all the las guns go into 2+ or 1+ saves now. But things like plasma guns are a lot more harmful because you can't bounce them on a 3+ invuln.
Hmm. Yeah. What do you think? Yeah. What do you think about their secondary objectives? Like,
I think the one that's so there's a bit of a trap one in there. The one that's kill points. So you play against Xenos and you just get a kill point for every like squad that you kill. That's a Xenos, essentially. Like, you're playing against Nids, you get a single point for every squad.
That's no mercy, no respite. Score one victory point at the end of the battle round for each enemy Tyranids, Eldari, Orc, Necrons, and Tau Empire unit destroyed by a Death Watch unit from your army during the battle.
And my cautionary tale is there that if you have to wipe your opponent to get a decent score on that, don't take it. Hmm. It's a trap.
Well, what's the threshold for that then? So
whatever you measure it by, I guess, like whatever the individual would. But if I'm playing against Dark Elf,
if they have 20 units,
should
you pick it then? If they have 15, do you not pick it?
If they've got 15, I'd say you don't pick it. Unless they're like 12 or they're 15, or like Venoms with 5 Cabalites in it, in which case, go for your life, son.
If it's 15 Tyranid units, that means they're taking the biggest bugs, and they have to come at you.
Well, if exactly right. If it's like Gaunt Carpet, they're only going to have like 60 units. So it's not going to be a factor. But yeah, the ones where it's apparent are going to be good. The only issue is, like, if your opponent, let's say, then takes something like While We Stand, We Fight, they can just play a game where they decide not to give you kills, and essentially they're doing double duty. They're stopping you from getting kills, and they're also getting points at the end themselves. So there's things like that that can become a bit of an issue. Like I just said with the Venom spam one. So if somebody like had, you know, 10 Venoms with 10 units of Cabalites, and then their 3 While We Stand, We Fights are, you know, 3 Homunculuses or Archons or whatever they are, which is a very good play, by the way, for Dark Elder. If you want a way to make sure you get a decent score or to have a better chance of getting a decent score, play for While We Stand, We Fight. It's kind of the safest way to get 15 points and to start playing cagey, clever 40K. And the opposition just be like, okay, well, I'm never moving off my back line. I will get exactly 3 units of Cabalites out that are going to stand in 3 ruins that you can't see through to stop your deep strikes. And I'm just going to sit at the back of the board. I'm going to take 15 at the end of the game. I'm going to stop you getting anything on your kill points one. And then I'll sling out a Venom every other turn to stop you getting 15 on primary. We'll both get 10-10 on primary. We'll end up with 50, you know, maxing primary each. And I'll win because I get 15 for While We Stand and you get none for your secondary. Does that make sense?
We will.
Yeah, I feel like that one's a bit of a trap. But there's another one that they've got that's really good. I can't remember what it does, though.
Purge the Enemy is the one that you get points by taking out battlefield rolls. If you selected the secondary objective, then after both sides have finished deploying, starting with your opponent, both players alternate selecting battlefield rolls, HQ, troops, etc., from the units in their opponent's army until 3 different battlefield rolls have been selected. If their opponent's army does not include the units with 3 battlefield rolls, select as many as possible. At the end of the battle, for each battlefield roll that was selected, score 5 victory points if every enemy unit in your opponent's army with that battlefield roll has been destroyed.
Hmm. With every unit, and it has to be up to how many per thing? It has to be up to 3 per slot.
No, you just select 3 battlefield rolls.
Oof. Yeah, I don't mind that. That's kind of saucy.
Yeah, until you get 3. So you only got two elites, I'm gonna pick that.
Yeah, you're right. I've got two elites that you have to use to win the game. Sick.
Yeah.
I think it's good. I think there's some flexibility to it, because especially with some of these lists that folks have, there aren't necessarily that many battlefield roles out there. But I also think it goes back to the trap that Adam was just talking about, as far as you've got to actually kill all that stuff, and sometimes easier said than done.
Yeah, well, one guy left with one wound at the end is five lost points. So
that's right.
The shadow operations, that's like stronghold actions and that kind of stuff. I don't know. It seems, I'll read it. If you selected the secondary objective, then after both sides have finished deploying, your opponent must select one objective marker on the battlefield to be the location of their stronghold objective marker.
I remember this one.
If you selected this secondary objective, then Death Watch infantry units from your army can attempt the following actions described in the Warhammer 40,000 core book. Cripple Stronghold. One Death Watch infantry unit from your army can start to perform the action at the end of your movement phase if it's within range of the stronghold objective marker and no enemy units, excluding aircraft, are within range of the objective marker. This action is completed at the start of your next command phase, so long as the unit performing the action is still within range of the same objective marker. Score 6 victory points each time a unit from your army successfully completes this action.
I'd love that to be worth more points. So what you're pretty much saying there is your opponent gets to pick their easiest to defend objective in their deployment zone. And then if you manage to get so deep into their deployment zone that you can take and hold their home objective, you get 6 points. Only 6 points. If you've accomplished pretty much the hardest thing to accomplish in a game of 40K, 6 points. Yeah, I don't know. I don't like it that much. I feel like it should be worth more.
Yeah.
If I can accomplish that, I've probably won anyway. Like, I could probably have taken something that was going to get me 15 points.
Yeah.
I don't know how you guys feel about it.
Yeah, so the Long Vigil is the next one. Score 5 victory points at the start of your command phase if there are no enemy units, excluding aircraft, within 6 inches of your deployment zone. And there is at least one Death Watch unit, excluding aircraft, from your army wholly within your deployment zone.
I like that one a lot.
You can't score it on first round.
Thank God.
Yeah. No, that's really, I think, just like the Necron Purge the Vermin one, depending on the army that you're facing, that's awesome. You could honestly, again, like, you take those eliminators, you put them in the back, you're fighting something like Necrons, which, unless they've got the Veil of Darkness, they're not going to be really bouncing up that quickly. At least most of the Necron builds are. I think there's a ton of potential to, again, you know, sitting there looking at across the table at what am I playing against? Okay, this secondary makes sense. That one of, well, the enemies outside of airplanes, it's going to be a while before they get to the back edge. I'll take that one. I'd take that in a heartbeat.
Remember what I just said about the guys who were like, oh yeah, I don't need to engage to get 15 points, and you're like, well, I don't need to either, brother. Enjoy. But exactly. When the opposite is true, you take this and then you take attrition. Yeah, so attrition is the one, it's essentially kill more. If you've killed more units than your opponent, you get some points, and then you're like, okay, if you don't feed me units into my deployment zone, I'm gonna get 5 points. If you feed me units, I'll only get 3 points, but you have to feed me units into my deployment zone. I love that duality. I love that using using your objectives to try and psychologically mold your opponent into doing what you want them to do.
Yeah, I think Space Marines can play that game pretty well.
Very well. Well, you can just make a meat grinder of a list for Space Marines.
Yeah, but see, we haven't talked about long range shooting. Like, everything we've discussed is being what probably maybe it's our play style, but we haven't discussed adding in any of the beefier long range stuff.
Well, what is the beefy long range stuff for Space Marines now? For me, it's like their best beefy long range would be Redemptors,
Contemptor Dreads, and Redemptors. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Contemptors are sitting in such a beautiful place at the moment, just literally because they got that core keyword on top of being like hard. But long range firepower, it's died off a little bit. I mean, Repulsor Execution is, where are they? I haven't seen one this edition. I don't know. Have you guys looked much at the Gladiators?
But I want to, because, look, I'll be honest, it looks good in red.
It looks fantastic in red, doesn't it? Actually, looks very good in Space Wolves colors as well.
Yeah, it's so the Primaris tank line, it's kind of in a weird spot. Like, what's the Repulsor do now?
Well, like, yeah, what does it do? I mean, it's still like the Dacker Brick of Doom. It still just shoots and shoots and shoots. But you can do the same on a bunch of infantry that can still, you know, that have OBSEC, that can perform actions. And you're just like, you lift scratching your head a little bit. Like, why would I actually take this?
I've seen people still working in. I mean, I'm still a big fan of the Impulsor, and
me too. Actually,
it can play in the Death Watch list. I think it still can. I think it's a good I mean, if you're taking Blade Guard, you know, it's a good caddy for those guys. But I feel like, yeah, the Executioner and the Repulsor are in like a weird spot. Like if I'm going to take a gun tank, I don't know. I guess maybe because it's shiny and new, but I'm drawn to the Gladiator.
Yeah.
But I also don't know how many points it is. I couldn't tell you how many points it is off the top of my head.
They start around the 200-ish. I think they go up from 200 to 220. Sorry, 250. Don't quote me on that. I might jump out later and have a quick look at the codex. But I wasn't overly impressed. It felt a bit like how if you remember how the first line of
The Repulsor Executioner when it came out was not amazing.
Well, the original Repulsor when it came out wasn't amazing. The Repulsor Executioner was, but
fair.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. You know, when the first line of Primaris stuff came out, everyone was just like, eh.
Okay.
yeah. And then, you know, in recent memory, it's gone through the absolute roof. But I feel like that's kind of the similar stage as what this new stuff is. Like, I don't want to smash down on them too much, but the new land speeders are not very inspiring. They're actually quite disappointing for what they bring to the table. I feel like the Gladiators might be the same, except for the Dakar one. The Dakar one is like what a Punisher tank commander wishes he was. it looks upon it with envy.
Maybe we should revisit this part of the conversation when we have got the Gladiator in our hands and played with it a little bit. But I think that right now the Dreadnoughts fit that role where if you wanted to, you could have your forward units, like you could have your one kill team up there with the Inceptors. God, I've done it again. The Incursors and all that stuff.
There you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
and the Eliminators, and then you have your 10 Outriders screaming up the field, and while you're sitting in the back scoring those 5 points with these, I mean, you don't really want to shoot at a Dreadnought unless you know you're going to kill it.
That's right. It's very, very true.
And now it's harder to kill him, you know, without spending anything else other than your point investment.
Mm. Yeah, look, I think Deathwatch can actually do dreads a lot better than many others. A lot of people are talking about getting a couple of Redemptors and giving them the Fortress of the Minds, the 5+ inborn bubble.
Yeah.
And that's you know, can't say anything bad about that combo. That's incredible. But you don't need to, for Deathwatch, you don't need to cast a Psyche Power to get that off. They just have a relic that gives you a 5+ inborn bubble. So, you know, you're getting the same benefits, but you can't be denied. You can't be stopped. You can't fail it. You can't get your own guys killed through, you know, perils and such. It's just the same thing, but better. Mm. So yeah, I'm a big fan.
It's really nice when most of your army is core too.
Yeah. Yeah, so the relic, the Dominus Aegis, add one to the armor saving throw made for the bearer. The bearer has the following ability: Dominus Aegis aura. While a friendly Deathwatch core or Deathwatch character unit is within 6 inches of the bearer, models in that unit have a 5+ invulnerable save.
Crazy powerful. Crazy powerful.
Yeah. So yeah, make your little firebase. Spend 400 points, get yourself a little firebase back there, and score 5 points around while your opponent doesn't know what to do with themselves with 10 Outriders and 10 Eradicators.
Yeah, five Infiltrators on the backfield, five Eliminators on the backfield, 5 Infiltrators in front of the Redemptors, pushing back any Alpha Strikes against them. And then, man, just go ham. You got your Fortis kill teams, you got your Indomitor kill teams for the rest of the board. It's a good list. I've written that list. You want to hear it?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Let's do it. So Captain on bike, Storm Shield, Power Fist, or Thunderhammer, take your pick. It's because he needs to be the caddy for that buff. And of course, he's got a bigger base for you to put it on, so you get more mileage out of the 5+ inborn. Librarian with a jump pack, of course. You've got a Watch Master as well, because you want the rerolls. Got 2 Fortis kill teams, 5 Intercessors, 5 Outriders. Got 1 Indomitor kill team with 5 Heavy Intercessors and 5 Inceptors that could easily be swapped out for 5 Eradicators. Then I got a Chief Apothecary, a Redemptor with everything, and 2 Redemptors with everything, using the Plasma Incinerators, Onslaught Gatling Cannons, Frag Storms, and Icarus Pods. And then I had 3 Outriders in there, and I think that's another list that had about 60 points left over. So you could easily drop the Outriders, move around some of the points in the Fortis kill teams, maybe get another kill team in, drop one of the characters, maybe get another kill team in. But as a core, like 3 Primaris kill teams, 2 Redemptors, and character support just seems very strong. Very, very strong.
Yeah, I don't mind this. I mean, I went into this with, I was optimistic. I knew you guys would come up with something cool, but I'm on board. I can get behind this.
Well, you probably got to find the points in that list for the Eliminators, the Eliminator, and is it, what's that kill team called? Spectrus kill team? Yeah. You'll probably be able to find the points in that list for that kill team in there as well, having the infiltrators and the eliminators. I was a little bit down on the Spectres at first because I wish it started with incursors instead of infiltrators.
Sure.
Just because it's 15 points per model more for an eliminator.
I wish you could pick. I wish you could choose between the two.
Yeah, I wish. Because it would reduce you by, what's 15 points, 15 times 5? 60 points? It would just be straight 60 points cheaper to take that combination.
Or 75, yeah.
I can't math at all. But you get what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, 75 points, pretty big deal.
It would be a lot more palatable. I mean, that's that apothecary that is bought and paid for just by the difference in those points.
Yeah. Good old apothecaries. I'm glad that those, like all these secondary characters, because there was for a while that you didn't take them. Like you needed a chapter master or a lieutenant and nothing else mattered.
Yeah, that's
But we're seeing some variation now because you still want to take a chapter master or a lieutenant.
Well, sure.
But you also want to take this other stuff.
When you have a character that returns 200 plus points back to you, why would you not?
Just kill the guy. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Just kill it. That's just a listen to everything, Paul.
That's right. Look, we're going to be talking about Blood Angels real soon.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. We're recording this on like the eve of Blood Angel week. So, you know, there may be another episode coming shortly behind this.
Awesome.
But yeah, that's kind of what I thought for Death Watch. And I honestly, like, that's like just my first impressions of Death Watch. The sky's the limit with that faction. Was it last week that I said that they're in the worst spot they're ever going to be in right now?
You did, yeah. Better? I mean, your theory is that they will bloom over time because they will have an answer for everything based on without. And that's what I was saying earlier. It's like, you don't actually have to change your model. You can take this exact list and just alter your set of stratagems and stuff.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, getting yourself like 15 heavy intercessors and then 15 eradicators and inceptors, you can pivot into whichever build is better for what you're playing against. Admittedly, that's like your entire army. There's 350 point units, but you get what I'm saying. You know, like they're malleable. They're very customizable. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And then stuff like the strategies, we went through some of the high points before, but based off some of the stuff that we've been talking about, you know, they're like Relentless Assault uses strategy in your movement phase when a Death Watch biker unit or a kill team unit that contains a veteran biker or outrider from your army falls back. The unit is eligible to charge even though it fell back this turn. So let's think about that for a moment. You bring up your big fat unit of outriders that we've already discussed, you know, outriders of unusual size, the OUSs.
Keep going.
Yeah, and then they've already moved up 14 inches, possibly charged into something, and then they fall back and then charge again. I mean, that's like, what is it, 70 billion inches of movement?
Mm-hmm.
In turn two, they're on the back table edge and killed things along the way.
That's right. And is it for one CP or is it two CP?
One
you can change
CP.
Them into
a single CP.
And for another one on top of that, you can give them another army's chapter tactic. You can make them ultramarines. You can make them white scars. You can make them, all sorts. Do you need to ignore cover?
They are blood angels to get that plus one to wound.
Well, exactly right. Do you need the plus one to wound? Are you going into toughness 5? Do you need to advance and shoot your weapons? White scars. Do you need to fall back and charge? Do you need to fall back and shoot ultramarines or white scars? Like, it's actually crazy what you can do with that unit. And what you do with all these units, as soon as you open up that little toolbox you've got. Can you confirm if that's one or two CP, though?
One
I feel like
CP.
It should be like...
Relentless Assault is one CP.
Oh, good God. I meant the one to change your... give you a chapter tactic.
Adaptive Tactics is two CP.
I think that's the one to give you every chapter tactic. So every doctrine, apologies. Never mind. It's in there. It's good. You'll play it.
Oh, I'm sorry. The adaptive tactics is that lets you change your battlefield role for the purposes of Xenos Hunter's chapter tactic.
Okay, still good as well, but that wasn't what I'm talking about. There's one in there that lets you account as an additional chapter.
Adoption, but that's also pretty good.
There's a lot of good ones in there. Yeah, I just think you're going to be very happy. Well, little gripe. They made everything in the book playable. Except I feel like the Corvus.
We talked about this. It's expensive like any other flyer. It hurts, but I don't think that any Death Watch player is surprised by this.
No. Yeah, it's true. The other thing I haven't actually looked into is the Fragstorm cannons. Because that's their special source. That's their weapon that they have that no one else has.
For the Firstborn, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there's also there's a little tactic a friend of mine was talking about.
Also have a frag cannon.
Oh, come on.
Adam,
Not the same. Not as cool.
The frag cannon is the frag shell is 12 inches, assault 2d3, strength 6, neg 1, damage 1, blast. And then the shell is 24 inches, assault 2, strength 7, neg 2, 2 damage.
Nice. Well, it depends on how many points it is, but pretty nice. Yeah. There was a cheeky unit one of my mates was telling me about. It's the flamer bomb. You can make a flamer bomb now with them because you can take a bunch of the guys with heavy bolters with the underslung heavy flamers.
Oh, yeah.
And you just come down with your 12-inch heavy flamers and shoot your heavy bolters as well. And, I mean, it's minus 1 to hit on the heavy bolters, I assume, because they're... Actually, I don't know that for sure, but you'd assume because they're essentially just like a super combi weapon. But, yeah, that seems like it has some play. Flame on.
Yeah, I'm digging it. Well, guys, let's take a break. We'll come back and talk briefly about some Space Wolves.
Yeah.
See you in a minute.
FTN is also on Facebook. Please like us at www.facebook.com/ForgeTheNarrative.
We are back. It's just Adam and I, Red Head 2 Drop. We thank him for hanging in there with us.
Yeah, he does a good job, Red.
Brotherhood or Veterans was that's a 2CP stratagem that we were searching for earlier to how to change your chapter tactic for one round.
I can't get over how good that is. Like, it's so, so, so strong.
Yeah, and you're doing it in the command phase, so you got to have a little bit of advanced thinking, but
yeah,
not much.
I think a lot of the time it's going to be obvious, but I think there's a lot more you can do with it that's subtle that people won't see. I mean, if you got, let's say you got 4 CP to dump, but it's going to win you the game. You can change to Dark Angels, and then you can spend 2 CP on an infantry unit to count as remaining stationary, and then you get a +1 to hit, essentially.
To throw in that, I'm going to get a -1 to hit this turn, or... Oh, I need to dig you out of cover. I need to make absolutely sure I dig you out of that ruin.
Yep. Oh, yeah, exactly right. You got a unit you're going to be throwing into someone's face. I'm going to iron hands it so they got to feel no pain because they're going to be away. I'm going to need to shoot them out away from my apothecary. Things like that. Phenomenal. Yep.
Knowing that it exists, becoming intimately familiar with what those things are so you can just pivot to that at any time, I think is going to be good.
Exactly right. Talking about the puppos, the good boys, the doggos. So,
Space Wolves, okay, can I just say just take a lot of Thunder Wolves? And...
Well, it really seems like they're the thing that's been pushed more than anything else, yeah?
They've got some good stratagem support, and that's basically it. I think that they get, by nature, are durable units, and you can kit them out to be up close and personal really easily, and they've got stratagems that help them be even more aggressive.
Mm. Yeah, and they're very well positioned in the game at the moment as well. Like Thundercav, you want things that can close the distance, and that can actually just rip your face off when they get there. But when they get there, they have staying power as well. And I think Thunderwolfcav just tick all those boxes.
No,
they're quick. Good amount of wounds with a good toughness and great saves. And the damage output is, well, literally the sky's the limit. It's just how much you want to put into them.
Well, you pay a healthy chunk for them. I should say healthy chunk. You're paying, I mean, probably with any amount of, if you just put a base amount of equipment on them, you're paying over 50 points.
Well, so it is exactly 50 points, I think.
Well, that's with a storm shield. It's 50 points exactly with a storm shield. But then I think you probably want another weapon.
Yep. Well, so it depends. I actually quite like mixing up in the units. So there are some units that I think you should specialize. If you can take three of a good unit, like Harlequin troops, yeah, because you can take 3, 4, 5, 6 of these units, I feel like you should specialize them because you've got enough of them that you can put them where you want them to be. When you think something that we use the term bully unit, you want it to kind of be able to do a lot of different things. Like, I think the best example of that was the Assault Centurions. They had the ability to clear any screen with the amount of shooting and flamers they had, and then they could kill anything in combat with the punching power.
Yep.
Thunderwolf Cav, I think you want them to be able to do that. You want them to have like a couple of fists. You want to have maybe one dude with lightning claws, a couple of guys with to die first, you know, who just have a chainsaw. Maybe one guy with a chainsaw, two guys with two lightning claws each, and then two guys with power fist storm shield or thunderhammer storm shield, whatever have you. But I feel like it's a unit that you can make do everything.
Well, I guess with the Astartes chainsaw or something, and then the teeth from the Thunderwolf, you are putting out a pretty good amount of attacks.
Exactly right. You're always going to have this baseline of decent. As they're strength 5 -1, 1 damage, or they're 2 damage. There might be a strategy to make them 2 damage. So yeah, you tell me.
The crushing teeth is +1 strength, -2 AP, 1 damage.
Yeah.
And there is a strategy that enhances that.
Yeah. And so you're always going to have this baseline. Is that 3 attacks from each of those as well?
Yeah, 3 attacks. 3,
yeah. Yeah. So five of these guys, you're going to have 15 of those attacks. You're always going to have a decent amount of anti-infantry attacks. So I feel like you don't need the Thunder Claws as Thunder. Yeah, the... Sorry.
Lightning
thunder
claws. Everything's a
Lightning Claws.
The Snowy Claws, the Snow Fist.
You don't need them as much. But the fact is, Lightning Claws are so well-costed and so well-priced and, you know, positioned in the meta
so
that I feel like you
for
just take them anyway.
5 points for the additional AP... Would you spend 5 points to have an additional AP? And I think the answer is yes.
Yes. Most of the time I would. On a unit like this, for sure. The thing I question is whether
but
or not you need
mid-maxing,
the power.
If you're mid-maxing, you don't do it at all. You want to have, you know, you want to have two of those 60 millimeter bases that are there just there to eat wounds and keep them as cheap as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And look, one of these guys with a storm shield and just a sword, a chainsword, isn't a bad thing. Like four more attacks, or is it five more attacks that he gets? They got three base.
So the Thunderwolf cavalry have two attacks base.
Okay, two. So they have four attacks with the sword. Yeah, four attacks with the sword, three attacks, seven attacks for the total package. Nothing, not
seven
that expensive.
Quality attacks.
You get.
So, you know, yeah. The Astartes Chainsword, -1 AP by itself.
Mm.
And that's if you're not in the Assault Doctrine.
Do you want to throw, I think Thunderwolf cavalry are pretty known corny. Do you want to throw a bone to Wolfen? People are getting a little bit down about Wolfen.
Okay, I mean, I'm willing to have my mind changed. I think they're the clear B choice. If you're going to play a unit like we're describing what you want it to do, I think Thunderwolves are the best, and then you fill in with other units around that. But can you make a case to where how Wolfen support the Thunderwolves simply because are they in another slot?
I don't believe they are. I think they're both in
elites. Wolfen are elites, and Thunderwolves are fast.
Look, everything that is Thunderwolves are fast. Yeah. Sorry, it's Blade Guard veterans that I'm thinking compete with the Wolfen because that is the comparison. Now you've got a Blade Guard veteran and you've got a Wolfen. The Wolfen is faster. They've got the Blade Guard has more wounds. They both can have a Storm Shield, but the Blade Guard gets a 2+ armor from the Storm Shield, whereas the Wolfen doesn't. The Wolfen has a feel no pain. The Blade Guard doesn't. The Wolfen gets to attack even if it dies. The Blade Guard doesn't. But the Blade Guard just seems like a better platform for applying buffs and will just survive longer. We'll just be there for longer because of the third wound with
but
the 4+ involve.
You almost have to protect them more though because they're not moving as fast. So you have to invest more points in him, like an Impulser, or get lucky with terrain or Distraction Wolfen or whatever.
Well, a lot of people talk about Space Wolves going in waves. You have your first wave, which is your mounted cavalry, your Thunderwolf Lords and your Thunderwolf Cav that go up and just start, you know, bowling into people. But then you have to have things that come up behind them and actually sit the midboard objectives. Otherwise, you're denying to the opponent, but you're not capitalizing on your gains. And I think that's where the Blade Guard come in. They're cheap enough for 175 points that five of them, you can just chuck them on a midboard objective. And if, you know, if they're scoring you your 15, 10, you're getting your 10, 15 points on primary every turn. For 175 points, you would just do that. But at the same time, you just can't walk up and take them off the objective. They're not; these aren't five intercessors, you know. So yeah, I think that's where Blade Guards sit. They're this beautiful second wave that come up after the Thunderwolf Cav, and I do like that combination a lot because by the time the Thunderwolf Cav has connected in their deployment zone, probably turn two, the Blade Guard have moved on their second move in advance, have made it across the middle line, and are probably on an objective or two.
God, the kit bash potential! I've seen a lot of people put their Blade Guard in Space Wolf colors and regalia and shields and stuff. It's
beautiful. Gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
I'm waiting to see somebody put Blade Guard on their Thunderwolf Cav. Because I just think that's like that's the creme de la creme.
Oh, that'd be difficult right now.
absolutely.
Until those multi-part kits come out.
Yeah, you'd have to use the actual legs from the Thunderwolf Cav, and I'm not sure how you'd do it because they would just look too stumpy. You'd have to do a lot of work, a lot of green stuff work to make the legs long enough. Their shields, their aesthetic, like the Crusade aesthetic on top of the Thunder Cav, would look sick.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the Inceptor legs have like almost like stirrups. You know,
the Inceptors. Oh, but they're in Gravis, aren't they? Wouldn't they be a bit too chunky?
I don't.
I'm trying. Speculation City, population us. The other one is Wolfguard. So, they can still do some of the best Terminators in the game. I think only Dark
because you can equip them with like almost like their Chaos Space Marines. And that's anecdotally that was one of the critiques that we had about Space Wolves. They were like, yo, everything that exists on the Fang has been there since the Wolf time.
Yep.
Or not the Wolf time, whatever, when Russ was around. Mm. I think when he comes back is the Wolf time. Am I getting that right?
Probably. Someone
I
will
think
tell
when
us.
He comes back is supposed to be the Wolf time.
So I have a...
Don't grill me on that.
You're going to get grilled on that. I have what I consider to be a relatively competitive strong Space Wolves army that I had a mate send me through a while ago. And I'm sure he wouldn't mind me sharing it if you want to run through it.
Yeah, hit me real quick before we wrap up. Yeah.
All right. It's two patrols. First patrol, Wolf Lord on Thunder Wolf, double Lightning Claw, Imperium Sword Warlord trait, Saga of the Hunter, and upgraded to have Frost Weapon. So he's got two damage on his Lightning Claws, his Frost Claws, and plus one strength. So there's strength 5, minus 2, 2 damage, rerolls to wound. Mwah. Very sexy. And then a Wolfguard Battle Leader on Thunderwolf, Power Fist, Storm Shield, Resolve of the Bear, and the Wolfenstone. And then he's got a unit of 5 Assault Intercessors for his troops, 2 units of 5 Blade Guard in his Elite, and 2 units of 5 Thunderwolf Cav in his Fast Attack. The Thunderwolf Cav have 5 Power Fist and Storm Shields on each one.
Aggressive. The second patrol. I mean, I guess you guys know where to put those. I mean, we're actually not talking about a ton of points, but the Power Fist are 10 points apiece. Yeah, they're Power Fist are 10 points apiece. So you put the Storm Shield on this, so that's 20 points. So if he can move those between the two units, I mean, drop 2 of those in each of those, they have 80 points to stick somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, there's 300 points for each of those Thunderwolf Cav squads. It's pricey. The next patrol starts with the Primaris Chaplain on bike, of course, Master of Sanctity. This guy takes the Armor of Russ, and then he has another 5 Assault Intercessors. Wolfguard has 5 Wolfguard with Jump Packs, 3 with Lightning Claws Storm Shields, 2 with Power Fist Storm Shields, and then 5 Fenrisian Wolves, and 6 Plasma Inceptors. So when you talk about big, scary units, 2 units of 5 Blade Guard, 2 units of Thunder Cav, a unit of Wolf Guard, and a unit of 6 Plasma Inceptors, it's kind of got it all.
I like that. That is a waved approach. And having a character, a fast-moving character with a 2+ armor save is pretty strong. I mean, I guess he's going with the Master Sanctity to get those chants of the litanies.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to get the plus to charge for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I think that's pretty good.
I think it's pretty nice. I think it brings a lot to the table for Space Wolves. And I think, yeah, you're actually right. This is very much a waved approach. Like the Inceptors are like the problem solver of somebody's able to actually counter assault and wipe one of your Thunderwolf units. The whatever did that gets, you know, cops the Inceptors on turn 2 or turn 3. And then the Blade Guard can go in after and sit on the mid table. I like the Wolf Guard unit in this a lot, actually. The three guys with Lightning Claws and Storm Shields, 2 guys with Power Fist Storm Shields. I feel like it's a pretty versatile unit. It's 150 points for those 5 guys. 10 wounds, does a lot, gets a lot done. And it takes a lot more than 150 points to kill that unit.
That's probably pretty fair. Like, what about like Combi Melters on those units? Combi Melters and.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to Termies, he's going the Jump Pack dudes, so he's essentially going the Vanguard vets with him. If you're going the Termies for sure, like Combi Melter Storm Shield is actually sick, or Combi Plasma Storm Shield. Like you get, it's like a same but different Inceptor, you know.
Nice, man. Well, dude, that's a pretty cool list. Thanks for sharing it.
Nah, dude, thanks to Aaron Green sent that in to me, so thanks very much to him. I hope he doesn't mind me sharing it.
Secret's out now.
Yeah, it wasn't much of a secret. Whatever.
Well, that's it for the show, man. I think this has been a cool rundown. I mean, you know, getting to some practical applications of both of these codexes where I think I'm digging.
Well,
it.
I'm interested to see, like, you know, we're both friends with a couple of stats heads, some stats analysts. I'm interested to see how these two and, you know, shape the meta or shape how things are taken from the next couple of months. If there is much of a meta for the next couple of months, I know things are pretty much locked down in Europe and it's looking like America might be going the same way.
See you next spring.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Excited for that 2022 meta.
Adam, we'll say what's up to Red. We'll catch y'all next week.
See you then.
Make my day.